Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eyes Look at This Week in the Capitol, beginning as we always do with WISI Was There, the voices of four people on Foxconn, the Governor, Senator Johnson, two Supreme Court hopefuls, and this is important, how to use an EpiPen. There was testimony in an assembly hearing, I think Senate hearing, excuse me, and finally, one alderman from Milwaukee on the Sherman Park riots 1 year later. WISI Was There.
To build this campus, it will be a 20 million square feet campus. Not one facility, multiple facilities, really an ecosystem. That's big enough to put 11 Lambeau fields inside of this entire complex. 11 Lambeau fields.
This is going to be a brain gain, if I've heard it said, not a brain drain. For too long, we lose workers in Wisconsin. This is going to attract workers to Wisconsin. We're going to reverse that trend, and I think that is worth investing in.
This deal presupposes 15 years of economic growth. You know, we already have a hard time meeting our budget requirements with, you know, $700 billion in road bonding now and trying to figure out what we're going to do about the transportation budget. These are during good economic times. What's going to happen when a recession hits?
The question is it worth the risk? And by the way, from a standpoint of the public-private partnership, that's not a bad ratio, 10 to 3. Now, the question is, should Wisconsin be the one to bear the full three? You know, Illinois, you know, their workers will benefit. America will benefit.
Together, we reduce discrimination in this country by passing a Civil Rights Act and a Voting Rights Act. Together, we shattered some glass ceilings, but not the highest.
But I still don't think the candidates for justice should be politicians. I think that we need to interpret the law without favor. And I believe that everyone that comes in front of our courts should be given a fair shake and should be confident that they are sitting in front of a justice who has not pre-decided a case.
Think of blue to the sky, orange to the thigh. So it's fist, pull, push, count, and 10-1000. Call 911. And then you case it appropriately.
But I think in a microcosm, you know, this Sherman Park situation really represents, you know, the need for the city of Milwaukee to invest in neighborhoods. It isn't solely about Sherman Park. It's the need for equality in all the neighborhoods.
Okay, JR, that Foxconn vote, 59-30, moved it to the Senate after 6.5-7 hours of debate. You surprised at the no's, Representative Jarko and Representative Todd Novak. Those are the R's that voted no. You want to talk about them first?
Sure. Not really. I mean, I talked to Adam 2 weeks ago or so, and he had already had concerns then talking about, and his concerns were more that if you're going to create these environmental exemptions for Foxconn, to him, why not have them for everybody? To him, it suggests there's too much regulation on these things. This is unfair to have it for one company, but not for everybody. He also had some questions about the value of the deal compared to what taxpayers are putting in, so that wasn't a surprise. In talking to Novak this week, he had already raised concerns beforehand, saying he was getting a lot of constituent feedback saying they questioned the value of the deal. Mm-hmm. Plus, he's in a Democratic-leaning district, top of the ticket. It's not something it's not in his district, a little harder to sell, and so that wasn't a surprise he voted no.
Okay, go back to Novak, got 51% of the vote last mm-hmm. November. Jarko got 60.
Jarko's is like, you know, that's Republican seat. I mean, he's not...
Yeah, Western Wisconsin.
I think Robin Voss actually made a crack about, you know, Jarko being a libertarian on the floor yesterday.
Was that the reference to...
the 28th, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, that was a reference to him.
So, but Jarko, I mean, this is a, you know, again, about if this is an example to him of there's too much regulation, and if it's good for Foxconn, it's good for everybody.
Okay, now let's talk about the yeses. They came from Corey Mason of Racine, who's mm-hmm. running for mayor. when you look at last November's election, he got 87% of the vote against the independent. Mm-hmm. And the second and third votes by Assembly Democrats, Assembly Democratic leader Peter Barca, unopposed. Mm-hmm. And as was the third vote, Todd Onstad of Kenosha. If they face no significant election challenge, but they really feel this is a bad deal for Wisconsin, why did they vote yes?
And jobs for their districts, and this is important for their constituents. You're talking about, you know, family supporting jobs. Now, I don't have the exact breakdown of how much each job is going to pay, but you're talking about the possibility of having not just these jobs in those districts or in their backyards, but the ripple effect of everybody else having the benefit of the restaurants having more people eating there, the hotels being full of workers coming in. I mean, like the whole nine yards. So this is possibly an economic boom for them. Now, it's a little bit harder to sell the farther away you get from southeastern Wisconsin. But for them, this is a real, you know, real example of a major employer coming into their district where, let's face it, I mean, think of the companies that left Kenosha and Racine over the last 20 and 30 years. I mean, I was born in Kenosha, lived outside of Sturtevant, or I've seen Sturtevant. You know, J.A. Case Company employed my grandfather and my father. It is not the same company it was 35 years ago in Sturtevant and in Racine. So they're seeing this as a huge opportunity for them. So it's not a surprise now. They also said afterward, especially Barca, just because I voted yes and I'm happy with it, I want change. Like, I want joint finance to really try and double down and find these extra protections for taxpayers. There may be some blowback. I mean, Barca is leader of the caucus. You may see some progressives kind of in the base saying, well, why is this guy leading our caucus? He's going to vote for this bill. But I don't see a sense that, like, you know, he's just on the line or anything like that because he voted for this bill.
Well, okay. Last week at Rewind, I tried to bait you into making a prediction. And I'm glad you didn't do it because I would have been wrong. I would have said this final passage, you would have had 7 or 8 Democratic votes. Here's my question. Why all 9 City of Milwaukee Democrats against? Mr. Fields, who can speak nice about business, Josh Zebnik, why unanimous by City of Milwaukee Democrats? No.
Well, when I was sitting over there and Scott Bauer was here a couple weeks ago, we talked about the difficulty Dems may have messaging this vote. If they opposed Foxconn, how do you do it in a way that you don't seem like you're anti-job? Well, they found their message since this bill came out of saying this is a $3 billion giveaway, it's a gamble with taxpayer money. You're threatening other state priorities like education, Medicaid, because you're possibly taking money from them to meet these grants to Foxconn. Because let's be honest, we are subsidized. If this is passed in law, we're basically subsidizing the jobs Foxconn would have through the state, the deal. They see this as a giveaway of corporate welfare, a foreign company coming in and getting state dollars. So they found their message, and they pushed it hard because to them, they had hoped that there would be enough changes to make them find a way to get to yes. That people who are like a Gordon Hintz, for example, who kind of led some of the charge on the floor yesterday, maybe they were open-minded about it a couple weeks ago, like, well, maybe if you do this and this, I could find a way. We're going, no, after I looked at this more, especially that LFB memo last week, really got people's attention of a 25-year window until you actually start to break even. Now, that's just the tax dollars piece, right? What we give out versus what we take in. But that 25 years until you have a break even, that got people's attention about what this means.
But every talking point from Democrats that you and I have heard for 2 or 3 or 4 years has been about jobs.
Yeah.
And 13,000 potential jobs, now I'm not saying, you know, they're going to emerge, but the Democrats have been hammering on jobs, and here's a memo of understanding that says 13,000 jobs, $10 billion investment. In exchange, we will give you over the next 50 years $2.85 billion. So how can the Democrats saying you're not doing enough Republicans about jobs, here come some potential jobs, X number of thousands, and they go,
And I had a Republican walk by me yesterday when I was out in the Assembly Chamber and say, they've complained about not enough jobs for 6 years. Now not enough workers to fill the jobs. Make up your mind, what's it going to be? Now, for Republicans, there's a little risk right now in this vote because let's look at the timeline. The election is 14 months away.
Yeah.
Supposedly, if everything works out right, you know, you can't predict lawsuits, those kinds of things, but there should be shovels in the ground by next fall. But we're not going to have a Foxconn building, I don't think, up yet, are we? There will be some people hired. You're not going to see like the full 3,000. I think it's like 2020, something like that, for things really
3,000 in 2020.
So
that's in the Fiscal Bureau memo.
Right now, there's no downside. There's not going to be a problem. Now, Dems are going to argue about, well, like the wetlands, or I don't want to diminish those issues, but there's no real possibility of this falling apart or whatever. It's a win-win for Republicans. The question is the long term. Do we see these 11 Lambeau Fields like buildings pop
20
up?
Square, 20 million square feet of campus, some high-tech campus.
Do we see 3,000 jobs or 13,000? Do we see the ripple effect of 22,000 more? I mean, those are big questions that are out there. But it's going to take years until we find out the answer. So for Republicans, like, this is a huge announcement. I still talk to Republicans and say that for Governor Walker, this is like basically seals the deal for him next year. They're so confident about what this means for Wisconsin. Especially you think about where it's going to go. You know, Racine County has sometimes flipped back and forth. Kenosha's been Democratic-leaning. If you're a Republican and do well in both of those spots, that's good news for you statewide.
I also learned something yesterday. The Foxconn campus, 20 million square feet of manufacturing space, no environmental impact statement. That was also true, I learned, in the Amazon and the Milwaukee Bucks. I didn't know that.
No, you read the Bucks. It's a really interesting contrast of what happened 2 years ago versus this, right? 2 years ago, we talked about it last week, labor unions really pushed it hard on that project, but they also got agreement signed with the Bucks ahead of the vote that brought in a Janice Ringhand, a Janet Butte from southern Wisconsin, a Janet Bewley from up northern Wisconsin, a Jennifer Schilling from western Wisconsin, because they saw this is great for some of their constituencies. And oh, by the way, the Dem votes made it a big win. So it's Republicans dropping off. Here you only had a couple of Republicans drop off in the assembly, but you get that big Dem groundswell because you didn't see the same level of engagement from Foxconn with unions, contractors, et cetera, as you did with the Bucks. Much different, much different. Oh, and by the way, the Bucks arena, who pays for it? Milwaukee County residents. It's not people out state. You're not talking about a draw on the state treasury, talking about a draw on this.
But the state guaranteed $80 million, 55 of bonds, and then $25 million in interest. Because it was a very important debate yesterday on an issue that people could understand, let's listen to a few of those speakers, three R's, three Dems, arguing for and against that deal. Let's listen to some of the assembly debate yesterday.
And when you have an opportunity to bring an entire industry to Wisconsin, that offers hope for people. Earlier, the representative from the 10th pointed out the hurt in his neighborhood when Tower Automotive left, or the hurt when Daimler Chrysler left in the Kenosha-Racine area, or the hurt when GM left Janesville. It is not very often that you're able to bring an entire industry to a state, let alone an entire industry to America.
Today, we're being asked to sell out our kids' educational futures, our community's roads and bridges, environmental protections for our precious water and air, the hope of decent broadband access, and so much more that this $3 billion giveaway could have provided if our priorities had been given true consideration. What's worse is that we are selling out to a foreign billionaire's corporation, and it will be years into the future before we're done paying for the act that we are about to commit here today.
We're bringing a visionary entrepreneur to the state that's been able to lead and transform the electronics manufacturing market for over 40 years. Any entrepreneur and innovator that can go from working in a rubber factory in his early 20s to in his late 20s, realizing that there's a need for plastic knobs on TVs, to his 60s producing LCD screens, has my admiration and my attention. Now, I think there's been a built-in arrogance and a narrowness here today that second guesses this company. I would never bet against an entrepreneur who's a visionary.
We're not focused on the fact that Wisconsin workers presently are not prepared to work in mass in this industry, in high-tech industries. And workers outside of our state, as one of the representatives has highlighted, are better positioned to take these jobs, these supposedly 13,000 jobs.
Foxconn is not going to just impact southern Wisconsin. It is going to impact the state as a whole. I have a 42-year-old stepson who had six friends when they went to the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. All professionals, only one stayed in the state of Wisconsin. There was no opportunities for them. They left the state.
I have a 28-year-old son that's an engineer. His friends and his group of friends from Marquette, not one still remains in the state of Wisconsin. They live in surrounding states where they work and earn an income. They're excited about the Foxconn deal. They're excited with the fact that there will be professional jobs available for our graduates, and that it's a new and it's an exciting manufacturing. We know our millennials love IT, and this is right up their alley. They're inspired by this. We could have a brain gain instead of a brain drain.
I don't want to gamble with the taxpayers' money. And if I'm going to break even in 25 years, that's a horrible gamble. And that's best case scenario. I'm better off putting my money in a mattress or putting it in my checking account. At least the money's there. Here, I'm gambling the house with the hopes that I might break even in 25 years. That's not a good investment, folks. And you can do that with your own money, but by God, don't do it with taxpayers' money.
Yeah, one of the Democratic votes against this package was cast by Representative Dana Walks, a lawyer out of Eau Claire. Yeah. Now, he's a declared candidate. He wants to be governor, elected governor in 2018. He's the first declared candidate that had to vote on this deal.
Yes.
He vote no. What are your thoughts on...
A couple things I picked up. One, he announced his opposition well ahead of even the committee vote. He went on the Mike Gaucher show last weekend and said he's a definite no. That's kind of interesting. Republicans will criticize that, like, well, you take away your opportunity to act like you try to improve the bill because you said no before the committee even took it up. So yep. Takes that away, makes you more obstructionist. Democrats will say, well, for their members who have to vote on this, if you're not against Foxconn, how do you differentiate yourself from Walker next fall, the campaign trail? Because let's face it, Governor Walker's going to run this big time, assuming it passes the Senate, which we all know he's going to do.
Absolutely.
He's going to run this big time and also make the argument of, he's said it half jokingly so far, you have to reelect me to make sure this thing comes to fruition. If you're not against it, if you don't say no, how do you create a contrast on that issue? So it's a tough spot a little bit for Democrats in some ways.
Now let's throw it forward in terms of the next steps. What's going to be the Senate reaction? Was I right? Did Senate President Roth call assembly actions irrelevant?
Well, they were critical of not really being engaged or involved in the amendment process for the committee. What's going to be interesting, though, is Scott Fitzgerald earlier went on talk radio last week, and he kind of talked about taking time to really go through this, and he got boxed up a little bit by host saying, you know, don't screw this up, don't slow this down. So Fitzgerald was saying late last week, instead of, we're going to get it done, you know, by month's end, I think it was, we're going to get it done. Now the question is, will there be any changes from what the Assembly did? That'll be interesting to watch. If they change it, they got to send back the Assembly for another vote before it goes to the governor's desk. Will Fitzgerald want to see some change? Will he get any blowback if he tries to tweak anything? I don't know if there'll be like I think you talked about some more timelines that he was interested in seeing in this bill. We'll see if that can be worked out. Because remember, the MOU that the governor's office reached with Foxconn, one of the hitches is you can't really do anything in this bill that really violates MOU. So if you do too much, it may upset that. There's that kind of line they got to be wary of. But it looks like Joint Finance are going to come in probably Tuesday of next week, do a public hearing
on Foxconn.
They've talked about doing it somewhere around where the plant might be, so expect it in Kenosha or Racine counties. After that, they could exec the bill. The Senate could vote on it in theory, you know, end of the month of August, that last before Labor Day, and then get it back to either the Assembly or the governor.
What's a greater priority now for Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald? The Foxconn deal now passed the Assembly, or the state budget, which is, excuse me, many weeks overdue?
But he had said originally that the budget was a priority, or that they could be done in dual tracks. And now you may see Joint Finance work on both next week, kind of be watching for them to come back into any budget stuff. I talked to John Nygren, the co-chair on Thursday, who said they could come in and do some smaller items that are left. Not the entire thing, but some smaller items. So there could be some dual movement, but it's obvious the Foxconn bill is going to get done first for the budget's final passage.
Okay, but there's one other element here that plays into Foxconn. As you know, the Fiscal Bureau paper on August 8th said, if you do the Foxconn deal as proposed by the governor, you have to spend, and I wrote down the number to be precise, $307.6 million in the next biennium. Mm-hmm. So is there a growing fear that we're seeing softening or lowering tax revenues, especially at a time when Senate Republicans want to get rid of the personal property tax and Assembly Republicans want to do school aids, and we're still hung up on transportation. Isn't there, do you detect a growing fear that with a $307 million commitment in the 1921 biennium and some softening in tax revenues, that this budget is even going to be tougher to resolve now?
I would expect more so that they'll keep more cash in the balance than they were going to. Our statutory balance is like, you know, minuscule compared to what we spend. Excuse me. They expect them to keep more cash in reserve just in case. Governor Walker, I think, wanted to put, was it $20 million into the rainy day fund? I don't think that's going to happen. Whatever they have, they're going to keep it, whatever they can, they'll keep it in the checking account. So if things do soften, there's a little more of a cushion than we're going to have originally to take care of that.
Have we seen the last estimates of tax collections for the fiscal year that ended June 30? Have I missed it?
I believe so. I mean, okay. Nothing's changed. Bob Lang went in May and did his letter. Now, I think it's May, they go through and say, okay, yeah, up or down on the revenue estimate.
He said it was still going to hold up.
No.
But now caveat, it's August.
The caveat is,
have we closed the books on fiscal 17?
Excuse me. That report should be out, I think, early September.
Yeah.
They have a final accounting of the revenues. Then we get, like, I think, later on the spending. But one thing about the Fiscal Bureau projections was it was based off the idea there would be tax reform, the Obamacare repeal. So how that it plays in everything, that could take a while for you to figure out. That's going to be an adjustment come January.
Okay, enough on the Foxconn budget. The Foxconn plan is in the Senate. Joint finance hearing next Tuesday. We'll see how the Senate plays that and the budget. Next subject, the response of some of our Wisconsin elected officials to the president's remarks. First, both sides, then specifically, then both sides again. Let's just start with Governor Walker, JR. Any of the white supremacist groups or other groups just need to be unilaterally dismissed and denounced. However, the PS on that is, when asked about the president's statements, he said the president can speak for himself. Mm-hmm. So was Walker not as critical
as other Republicans? Sure. I mean, look at John Kasich, maybe the benchmark for Republicans critical of President Trump. And that guy will tee up.
Now you have Senator Corker, but go ahead.
Absolutely. But, you know, for Republicans, this is a continuous dance with this president of, I have to answer these questions weekly, monthly, whatever it's going to be, when he says something that people get offended by. How do you address that? And one thing is, whatever I say will ever be enough for the critics, because there are some folks who are never going to say, you can't say enough to hit the president on X, Y, and Z. So for people like Walker, you know, the president takes things personally. He holds things against you, holds a grudge. Look at his Twitter feed. People he's going after when they say things.
Jeff Flake.
Lindsey Graham. Yeah. Jeff Flake.
Yep, Lindsey Graham.
Do you want to get in the crosshairs of that, especially when you've got something like you want or that you want to work with the president on? So it's a difficult place to be. I don't know, even if Governor Walker trashed a president, if Democrats would be happy with Governor Walker. You know, so I don't know if that it does him any good. Now, it may win him some applause from some folks, but your base, you know, keep the base happy, that kind of thing.
You mentioned Democrats. Democratic Congressman Gwen Moore of Milwaukee. My Republican friends, I implore you to work with us within our capacities, elected officials, to remove this man as our commander-in-chief and help us move forward from this dark period in our nation's history. So, for Gwen, across the Rubicon, let's get rid of this president.
Now, the opposite of the spectrum from where Governor Walker is, going for that move right away. I think she's one of three Democrats, I think, maybe in Congress, who went for a call to remove from office. So I don't get the impression, looking at the national media, that that's going to happen anytime soon. But she is pushing very hard. I mean, look at her district. It's very Democratic. People are not happy with Trump. That's probably in line with a lot of people thinking in her district.
And Paul Ryan, who will be hosting a CNN-moderated town hall next week. Mm-hmm. We must be clear. White supremacy is repulsive. This bigotry is counter to all this country stands for. There can be no moral ambiguity. So he seems more definitive and calling out the president and calling out the hatred that we saw in Charlottesville.
But again, they didn't really go after the president by name. So again, the nuance is kind of important with some of these guys to, where do you want to cross the president? You know, when's it worth it to really get on his bad side, and what's it do for your agenda and everything else? So again, that dance they're doing constantly.
Is a town hall by Paul Ryan, moderated by CNN, that can only be attended by First District residents, a real town hall?
Democrats don't think it is because it's not open. We ask, we can't go cover it.
We cannot.
Yes. We have to watch it on TV like everybody else. And CNN will be the ones in charge of inviting people to come. So, you know, in that way, it's at the very least, you have to say it's a much more controlled town hall than Paul Ryan just walking into a room saying, okay, whoever wants to come, show up and come on in.
And then finally, really quickly, David Clark, President Trump does not have a racist bone in his body. Is he still looking for a job?
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing but with that regard, but he is going to defend the president to the hilt. So he's one of his best defenders when it comes to stuff like this.
Okay, just real quickly, there was a report released this week, excuse me, by the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, and it documented the widening income gap in Wisconsin. I just want to read three sentences from the report. Inequality is now back to the high levels posted just before the Great Depression. Sentence one. Sentence two. The average income of the top 1% in Wisconsin increased by 17.5% between 2009 and 14, while the remaining 9% experienced an average income growth of just 9.2%. Finally, families can't thrive when income growth is nearly non-existent for everyone except those at the top, and businesses need a strong middle class bolstered by broad-based income growth to generate customers. And in Wisconsin's case, we're working from 2014 data, and the Center on Wisconsin Strategy found that in 2014 data, latest available, the average top 1% of income earners in Wisconsin made $993,000, 19 times the other 99%, which made $48,913. JR, do you see reports like this and issues like this becoming a major issue in the campaign for governor?
Oh, you'll hear some talk about it from Democrats, but I don't know if it's going to be the issue next fall.
Okay, finally, stock picks.
So, rising the GOC Senate primary. I don't know if you saw this week, but Kevin Nicholson got endorsed by Club for Growth and also announced his campaign co-chairs that are finance co-chairs. That include Dick Uihlein, who, by the way, gave $3.5 million to a super PAC that is supporting Kevin Nicholson. Leah Vukmir, who's not actually in the race yet, that announced, okay, that's great, but I've got Diane Hendricks, who's going to be
as our finance chair
on our finance team, and Mary Kohler, a significant Republican donor, widow of Terry Kohler, will also be on my campaign committee as well. It's interesting to watch this. Nicholson also got the endorsement of John Bolton, former ambassador, I think a little week ago. You're seeing national groups, these two, look at Nicholson, liking his profile, and saying, okay, we like this guy. Good contrast for Tammy Baldwin. What's interesting is the field hasn't solidified yet. And so when this happens, we have national folks saying, well, this is the guy or gal. Local folks are going, you know what? I don't really like you telling me who is the favored person right here. Let us figure it out on our own. It'll be interesting to watch that primary develops. Also, don't forget that Eric Hovde is still looking about running. The Club for Growth is interesting because if you go back to 2012, they spent some money at primary supporting Mark Newman, criticizing Tommy Thompson, and criticizing Eric Hovde. Newman placed third in that primary.
Tommy was the nominee.
It's not like Club for Growth can dictate what happens in the primary, but it can spend resources to help Kevin Nicholson. Okay. There's also the question of, well, why Club for Growth get involved with Nicholson now? Like, what? I mean, there's a profile, obviously an attraction, but Dick Uihlein, again, big donor for Club for Growth. Chip Englander's working on Nicholson's campaign, also worked for Newman. There's some connections there, so that might explain a little bit why Hovde's getting involved now.
Uihlein from Illinois, race. Right?
Yep.
Okay, mixed.
Paul Ryan, talk a little bit about the statement that he made. For Paul Ryan, you know, there's this, he's learned a lesson of dealing with Trump. And it is that if you go after the president personally, a la Jeff Flake, a la Lindsey Graham, you get his crosshairs. If you get his crosshairs, you can't work with him. Paul Ryan has an agenda he wants to get done. If he is going to be sideways with the president, he can't get that agenda done. So for him, it's a balancing act of where do I lay down a marker with him and say this is not acceptable, and where do I work with him to get things done? Some people, you know, Ryan kind of allies told me that the speaker has figured out a little bit how to work with the president. They had a very ice relationship last year during the election, started along pretty well afterward, yeah. Kind of like got together. So there's that facet for him. You mentioned the town hall. That's interesting. Ryan's been criticized for not doing one now and have one. And thirdly, there's other thing going on where his primary opponent from 2016, Paul Nehlen, is back running again in 2018. Paul Ryan's allies want to delegitimize Paul Nehlen as quickly as possible because Nehlen got a bunch of national media attention a year ago. People here knew he wasn't going anywhere. I mean, we kind of got a feel right away this is not going to happen. But nationally, there's this fascination with Nehlen because Donald Trump retweeted him one time or praised him a little bit, something like that. So he got all this oxygen. Well, Paul Nehlen's handing Paul Ryan gifts all the time of like, I'm not a legitimate candidate because, for example, he embraced the Pizzagate theory,
yeah,
this whole conspiracy theory of this child sex ring with the Democratic Party.
Democrats, Hillary aides.
It just undercuts this guy being somebody to even pay attention to, and the Ryan folks are happy to emphasize that kind of stuff and say, look, don't even pay attention to this guy.
I completely agree with your falling. Go ahead, talk about it.
So you have Oshkosh Foundation filed for bankruptcy. Interesting, they take a shot at the Regents on the way out the door doing this. This foundation got in a bunch of trouble for some questionable real estate practices. There had been some talk about a bailout or something to resolve this involving the Regents. Steve Noske at one of it said, don't you dare use taxpayer money to fix this screwy stuff that they were doing. This is why the foundation kind of knocked the Regents for a flip-flop, in their words, in filing this. There's still some possible exposure for taxpayers about the cost of this, but this foundation is an example of just things are screwed up with what's going on. They had some shady deals. Now they got to get out of it. The bankruptcy may help them straighten things out. But you still have people like Scott Fitzgerald in the Senate going, you know, I'm not sure about all these foundations. There are many more. There are multiple foundations for each campus in some examples. Why is that happening?
Campuses.
Why is that going on? Should we be looking at this? This could be a problem for UW going to line. They may look at this closely.
That's a good call. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for August 18th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.